With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Puppies and kitties, books and movies. Yes, we love these. Listen to this podcast, please. Books like us.
Hello, welcome to Book Squad Goals. today, we are discussing Unsettled Ground by Claire Fuller. And we should say up front that Emily is not with us this evening.
This is the first of two No Emily episodes, which is sad.
Yeah, so get used to what you're about to hear.
Yeah, we're sorry.
Because it will happen again soon. But we are sorry for ourselves and for
you,
everyone listening.
Yes. I will say I don't feel sorry for her on the next episode because she will be out of the country having a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I feel bad for us.
DM her about that when she's gone. Yeah. Just tell her how jealous you are.
The general theme is that I feel happy for Emily and sad for us.
Across the board. Alrighty. So this novel centers on a sibling relationship. So I thought for the intro question, I would ask, what is your favorite story about siblings? And it can't be this one, so don't even try.
It's not this one.
How did I know that?
Gosh.
I'll go.
This is hard.
It's got to be Little Women for me.
Oh, man. That's a good one.
You know? It's a classic. And
a good one.
I always wanted a sister. I have had several different versions of brothers. I've had two stepbrothers. I have a half-brother. I have never had a sister of any kind.
Yeah.
And I am mad about that. So Little Women is like the ultimate dream. It's like you got all those sisters.
And they're close, too.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I'm, like, looking around the room, like, what do we have on the bookshelves in here?
How do I work Annihilation in?
I want to say maybe my favorite, just off the top of my head, is I love, like, maybe this is controversial. I love the siblings in the Chronicles of Narnia. I don't completely love everything the Chronicles of Narnia does, but I think The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe
Listen,
is really good.
I love the Chronicles of Narnia. I don't find this to be controversial. I read those as a kid, and I loved them.
I read them not as a kid, but when I was younger, and I was like, gosh, I just love this so much. And I read them more recently, and I was like, gosh, C.S. Lewis, you could have, like, covered up the allegory a little bit.
Subtle. No one said they were subtle.
There's also a part where, like, one of the siblings can no longer go to Narnia because she likes boys.
Yeah, she grew up and stopped believing and couldn't go.
Okay, no, it's because she wanted to have sex.
Pretty much.
And Aslan was like, none of that in here.
And that was Susan, the sibling.
It was.
The slut.
Checks out.
But the sibling relationship is really nice. Like, even though Edmund's a piece of crap, they're like, you know.
Yeah. He grows. He gets better.
Yeah. And in Annihilation, really the double of oneself
yeah.
is like a sibling.
For sure.
Just kidding.
you managed to do it.
Yeah.
I'm proud.
Yeah.
I'm going to go like just straight off the top of my head, but I really, we talked about these people last week, but I really love Ross and Monica Geller.
Yeah, I was just thinking like that would be a good one.
This is not a story like, about
it's
siblings.
Friends, a story about siblings.
So,
I mean, I would argue that there are...
Look, I can reword the question. I wrote it, so... That's all I could think of right now. But,
there are parameters, Susan.
Nah,
well, I'm going rogue tonight, you guys. It's a Thursday. I'm feeling crazy.
I'd like to announce, Kelly does have a kitten. A foster kitten that she is passing across the screen. And holding.
Yet again.
And it's That's great. Last episode, when you listen to it, you can hear me.
Yeah.
It's in the background.
A lot of that. And I cut out a lot of it, too. But I left some in for flavor.
That's cute. Okay, I'm sorry, Susan.
Oh, no, that's okay. I thought maybe while you were having that little aside that I would think of a real... like a better
I think that is that. A real okay. answer
but I haven't managed
it's
so
valid.
I'm just gonna say that I love that they have such a strong friendship and that they're still like very much in each other's lives because plenty of adult siblings are
not close
yeah or not even like nearby to each other
what up Hawks and Spehearts
so yeah That's what I'm going with.
You know, I will say, speaking of, I'm getting to see one of my sisters that I haven't seen in like 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Is that for Thanksgiving?
It is. She lives in Colorado now. And she is coming for Thanksgiving. So now I get to see her.
Well, great.
Yay.
See, imagine that. Siblings at Thanksgiving. Not something that I will be experiencing this year.
I mean, look. She's the only one. Like, the other two live in Soprenan. Not a big deal. But, like, two of my siblings live... And one's in Colorado and one's in Wyoming. And I haven't seen either of them in, like, a really long time.
Yeah.
I don't know that I even knew you had... A Wyoming based.
Yeah, they're all step siblings. I'm the only one from my parents because the world would have broken if there were two children in that marriage. but I have a sister and her family that lives in Wyoming. Her husband's in the Air Force, so they're up there. And then one's just in Colorado for kicks. Just
nice.
For fun.
I would like to move elsewhere for kicks, and Colorado seems a lovely place.
They like go hiking all the time.
Hey, Raj.
Probably.
Get back in your chair and be quiet.
Yeah, buddy. I'm like, how about the drugs? What's the situation?
I don't know. I'm sure I will get the scoop at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, get the scoop. See if you can get some edibles, probably.
You're like, hey, why are you guys coming? They're flying, so like probably not.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Tested it. It's fine.
I've done it. I've done it.
I feel like they have more important problems at the airport.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to spoil this book.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, you already know the drill. That's what's going to happen. Do we need any warnings for anything? Help me think.
Death. Poverty.
Poverty. Trigger warning for being poor.
Yeah.
Like, we don't talk about that all the time.
Right.
All right. Let's get into the Goodreads summary then.
Yeah.
What if the life you've always known is taken from you in an instant? What would you do to get it back? Twins, Jeannie and Julius, have always been different from other people. At 51 years old, they still live with their mother, Dot, in rural isolation and poverty. Their rented cottage is simultaneously their armor against the world and their sanctuary. Inside its walls, they make music. In its garden, they grow and sometimes kill everything they need for sustenance. But when Dot dies, suddenly threats to their livelihood start raining down. It's a weird way to say that. At risk of losing everything, Jeannie and her brother must fight to survive in an increasingly dangerous world as their mother's secrets unfold, putting everything they thought they knew about their lives at stake. Increasingly Dangerous World is also a little misleading.
It's a little hyperbolic.
What is that talking about? I don't know. Okay. Let's get started with this question that I am going to make Mary read because Mary put her name in the question. She had to help me write things today.
Today was a team effort.
It was mostly a Mary effort, though. I didn't uphold any end of that teamwork.
Mary is the person in the group project who does all the work. And
I also will say, like, every night when I have been reading this book, I'll, like, read it right before I go to bed. And I'll roll over, like, okay, I'm going to bed now. And Todd's like, what's wrong? He was like, what happened? And I was like, I don't know.
You were like, they're living in an increasingly dangerous world.
It's bad. It is a bad time for them.
Let me tell you, Todd, the world is bleak.
And every night he would be like, but like, it's still bad? And I'm like, yes, they are not having a good time.
It will not get better. Spoiler alert.
It will only get worse.
Yep.
Although, so, like, maybe at the ending I changed my mind, but I, like, spoiler for the behind-the-scenes process, I did finish this, like, an hour and a half before we recorded.
I finished it in even closer to the time of recording.
So, like, this first question was written before I finished, and I was struggling to think of, like, what this book was about or what Claire Fuller was trying to communicate to her reader. And I'm not a big proponent of, like, everything has to have a meaning and has to be, like, super profound or whatever. But
like, a book should have a reason to exist.
I did wonder for a lot of this, and it sounds blunt. I was like, okay, so, like, what's the point here? What's going on? Where are we headed in this journey? Because for about half the book, I was like, well, are we going to, is this it?
Yeah.
And it did pick up and, like, some stuff happened, you know, like, maybe in the last third that I thought was actually interesting. That sounds so shitty. But, like, what is Claire Fuller doing here? What are we supposed to be getting out of it?
Like, I think that this question occurs because there's something about this book that sort of, like, presents itself as, like, a mystery of some kind, but it's not.
There's a mystery.
But is
it's
there?
A little mystery.
Because at the beginning, you basically learn everything that you need to know.
I mean,
when Dot dies,
yes,
she's like, blah, 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 like, oh, and then the thing about Jeannie's heart, and that was the biggest lie of all, blah, blah, blah. Like, lays out all of this stuff, which, like, if you were paying attention, like, you figure out pretty quickly. Like, I knew, and you have a question about this later, about, like, the twists and stuff, like, did you know? It's like, I knew the entire time every twist that happened, other than the tractor thing, maybe, but that's, like, not even... Like, who cares? Like,
even a twist. That's more just, like, a revealing of more information.
That's just a horrific thing that happened in the past.
Right. So there's not really a twist, and the mystery is pretty, like, clear what the answer is to it. So, like, it's weird because I did enjoy the process of reading this book, and I liked the characters and I found them interesting, and I was, like, pretty, like, absorbed in this little world. But at the same time, I was having this question of, like, is this going to be a thriller? Is this going to be like, is something more going to happen here? Is this mystery going to, like, unravel in a really, like, crazy way that I'm not expecting? And it just doesn't.
Mm-hmm. I mean, okay, I'm really bad at detecting when things happen. If you need to know, like, go back to the Bourne episode.
Yeah, I mean,
so so embarrassing.
That's not even detecting when things are coming. That's just like, yeah. Understanding a thing that occurred.
That was a reading comprehension breakdown. For me, when I start reading a book, sometimes it takes me to like a little while to get into it. And Dot dies right out the gate. So like, I was really like not holding on to her words very hard because it's so early in the book. And also, I mean, she had a stroke, which your brain kind of zaps when you're having a stroke. So I didn't think like, ah, yes, she told me everything.
But she did.
She did though. But I didn't get that. But then like a third of the way through the book, I was like, okay, so Dot was definitely sleeping with the guy who owns their house.
Right.
And then I was like, no, that can't be it. That can't be it. And then when it was, I was like, well, here we are.
They were in love.
I don't know.
He said it. I found the pairing to be highly unlikely.
Suspect.
Yeah.
I will say, like, it does, to me, I did get the vibe of, like, sometimes we just can't know everything about our parents, and, like, because Dot had a whole other life that they didn't really know about, and I think Jeannie specifically, like, spends a lot of time thinking, well, did I even know her? There was all this other stuff going on, and she was lying to us. And I think it's both sides of that.
About the dangers of, like, overprotecting your children.
Boy.
Because, like, that is, like, the biggest thing here is that she, like, lied to them and kept all these secrets, like, ostensibly to protect them and make sure that they had, like, a safe life, I guess, after what happened to their dad.
It's not a good life.
No, and it's also, like, so not practical because as soon as you die, like, they're fucked, you know? Like, that was, I could not, like, relate to her decisions on any level. And because, like, she died at the beginning, it's like, I felt like I would never, like, understand who she was as a person or, like, why she did any of this. Because I was just like, why would you do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Susan. We came in hot.
No, I'm just like, yeah.
I'm not, and the thing is, like I said, I didn't dislike the experience of reading this book, and I think the writing is good.
I thought the language was often very lovely and like pleasant to read.
It is. But yeah, just like overall, I'm like, what was I supposed to take from this?
I mean, so the overprotecting thing is definitely a theme, but there's also like it's like a delayed coming of age, a very delayed coming of age. Like there's a moment when Julius is in the hospital and Jeannie is like, I'll figure it out if you're not here. Which I thought was like pretty huge for her because she has yet to figure out one little thing along the way. So coming to this realization that, like, I'm going to have to just, like, be a person in the world by myself, potentially, is some sort of coming of age.
Well, I mean,
coming of reality.
They're, like, both having a coming of age earlier, too, because Jeannie gets a job. She doesn't, like, cash her checks from the job, but like she goes out and gets a job.
I was like, girl, what are you doing?
She is working and she's so proud to be able to tell people she's working. Julius
has a
sex. He has some sex.
He has some sex.
He had sex before.
Yeah, but like, three times, though? Like, ever?
Yeah.
In his whole life? Which is... only 3 times in 51 years doesn't seem like much.
I mean, also, though, like, he let himself imagine a future in relationship with her.
Yeah. Now. Yeah, I mean, he proposed.
And she was like, I kind of like just, like, hanging out here with my cat.
I get it.
But, like, we could still fuck,
getting my titties
right?
out of my blouse occasionally.
She truly was like, I got a good thing going here with my cat and my books. And I, even though I am fully married, I was like, I get it. That sounds good.
I could see that for myself.
That sounds good. Like, you're just...
And he was like, well, we could live together. And she was like, I'm not really that type either, though.
Yeah. Again, relatable.
Yeah. but we could still have sex.
But, like, him figuring out how to navigate that relationship is something I think would normally happen to someone much younger. Like, they're both having this delayed coming of age.
Okay, so this next question, we kind of just touched on the language a little bit, but the setting, the descriptive language, glorifying village life. Mary also found that several Goodreads reviews mentioned that the novel romanticizes poverty. So let's talk about language and romanticizing poverty.
I like to do the thing where I say, show me the 1-star reviews.
Yeah, let's... once again, discuss how stupid people on Goodreads are.
That's a critique I've truly never heard before. That's a first time.
Yeah. It's, well, they were... poverty. Here's the thing. These people on Goodreads were like, this novel's romanticizing poverty, and it's clear that Claire Fuller's never been poor a day in her life. Like, they were just raging in the comments, and I was like... I don't know. Seems like Jeannie and Julius had a pretty crappy time.
Yeah, I'm just like, how, like, it was so fucking sad. Yeah, like, how could you think that that was romantic? Like,
maybe towards the beginning, like, if you didn't finish the book, I could understand how you would think it was romanticized because they're living from the garden. They're growing their own food.
But they're not even living well from the garden. Oh, I mean, that's not going awesome either.
Yeah, it's like, they don't... they also, like, aren't fully aware of how poor they actually are for much of that time. Like when it gets into the real, like, we can't make rent, we don't have a
home. We have 3 pounds.
Yeah, like, when she goes to the store and is just, like, looking at each item and thinking, like, what can I afford? Like, which thing do I need to put back? Which thing is cheaper? Like, all things that, like... I have done in my life and have but I've never been in, like, a situation as dire as this was.
Yeah.
And it is, like, just really tough to read. And I can't imagine reading that and thinking, like, this is a romantic view.
It's really not.
This. Like, romanticizing village life.
Sure.
Yes. Sure. Which,
not,
like,
even that, really.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, I think that that's just the nature of that kind of story that takes place in a small town is, like, there is something romantic about it, like, legitimately in real life, too, but then there are also a ton of issues, which this also touches on, so.
Yeah, like, it seems nice to begin with, like, oh, everybody's looking out for each other, and, you know, that's nice, but then it's like, okay, but they're also in your business. Mm-hmm. And judging you and pitying you and...
But even though these are, like, the rest of the cast of characters are also small town people, the only people that are truly, like, roughing it this hard are Jeannie and Julius.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Like, the Rawsons have an Alexa. Yeah. They're having a very, like...
they go to Greece.
...normal existence over there. Yeah.
Bridget might be a hoarder, but she has a home.
Yeah.
Bridget, God.
Bridget.
Wasn't that the annoying neighbor's name in that Sherry Lupina book that we read?
Probably.
Oh, I think it was.
Do you think it's her?
The one who is like knitting at the end a sweater for her baby or whatever.
This is actually a continuation of that woman's story.
I don't know. I don't love small town life. If Emily was here, she would be like, girl, you live in a small town. Hattiesburg is not big. But
you have access to things, though. You don't have to, like, walk miles and miles to, like,
I mean, I grew up in a town where, like, to go out to eat, you had to drive to the next town 30 minutes. And even then, they only had chain places. Like, you could go to McDonald's or, like, Pizza Hut or something.
Yeah.
And, like, did you need to get clothes? You got to drive to the next town. Like, nothing was in town. And that's not fun. That's not, like, a fun, cool place to live. And so when, like, at first everything sounded nice, like, oh, there's a little deli and they can go down to the deli and there's a pub. And but by the end of the book, it's so bleak and everything seems awful. I don't know. I didn't think it was romanticizing much of anything.
Yeah. I mean, just because language is beautiful doesn't mean the thing it's talking about is beautiful.
No.
or that the author is trying to say that, because I don't think that's what it was. I think it was, like, giving us a little bit of a glimpse of, like, how Jeannie sees the cottage and how she sees the garden and the things that she associates those things with. But I don't think we were supposed to take away from that, like, oh,
I want to live there.
This is glorious. Because I didn't. I was like, damn, I want to live in, like, the English countryside, but not like this.
Not like this. Not in a house with no electricity, with drafts coming in.
They had a doggy, though.
Without a working toilet.
This does romanticize dogs.
Yes.
And that's fine. Yeah.
The dog was perfect.
I was very concerned.
Me too.
About that situation. I was like, oh, no, the dog's going to die. And then I was like, oh, just kidding. The dog's fine, but Julius is going to get shot. it's like that went so much darker than
but
I expected.
But honestly, I was more okay. Like, if the dog had died, I would have.
I know,
been
I would have
so
been
upset.
Really sad.
Because the dog didn't do anything to anyone.
Yeah.
I love the that his really name cute. Is Maud.
Maud.
Too.
Maud.
Like, what a great name for a dog.
I know.
I will say, and this is kind of the next question, but, like, it was hard for me to remember that this book takes place now.
Yeah.
Because they don't have anything.
Yeah. Well, and until you're brought back to the present day with an Alexa.
Yes.
There's not a lot of other markers of, like, this is very current. I mean, even, like, after Dot dies and they're just having to go through the kind of business elements of what happens when someone dies, like just going to get these certificates and blah blah blah, all of that felt like so inconvenient that it seemed like it happened a long time ago. Like, this must be the 80s,
but
or
you got to get this form to get
it's
this
inconvenient
form to get this
because
yeah I'm like
poor.
This is not modernized. How are we not just sending emails of this right now? But then it's like, Alexa, turn off the farm lights. And
There was Alexa, and like, okay, cool, we get that. But like, most of the time, it was just like, we're in an electricity-less cottage. So when you get to the Alexa, you're like, wait a minute, who? What is there?
It's like that moment in The Village when you see,
yeah,
like
cars.
Oh, there's just like a park ranger. We're not in the 1800s in some weird colony.
Even, like, Julius's phone, 100%. Like, you know, it's a Nokia.
Yeah, he has like minutes.
Probably. That he's probably running out of because that shit's expensive.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, like, I had that in high. That was like my first cell phone was like a pay as you go kind of thing. And my mom would be like, I bought you 50 minutes. And I could only use it to, like, call her to be like, I'm on my way home, or whatever.
Come pick me up.
That shit I mean, if I went over, she was like, you cannot do this. Like, yeah. It's so expensive. And if you only have 3 pounds, imagine how skimpy you got to be.
Well, Julius would do jobs, but then just, like, use the money to get tobacco and drink at the pub.
Right.
And yeah. Honestly, like, I got the vibe. Dot, before she died, and Jeannie were like, he needs to do those things. He is a man. Gotta have a drink at the pub. Gotta have his phone. Gotta have his tobacco. And I'm like, he really doesn't have to have tobacco. Or, like, when you can't buy food to eat, he does not need to drink at the pub.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't need to, but if the only thing in your town is that pub and everything else is, like, the world is just shitting on you and your only option is to self-medicate, beer is probably the cheapest way you could do it.
Yeah, it's like, I get it. Because also,
I'm not saying, like, poor people don't deserve to have fun.
Right. How dare you? And, like, also, he is, you know, bringing in the money for the family. So it's, I get why they're like, let him have his share since he did the work. And we're hanging out with the garden, which is bringing us zero income because of this asshole at the grocery store who's like, I'm only going to give you what sells. Like, sir, that is not how this works.
I don't
want
any radishes.
Yeah, I mean, I can see, and I get why he drinks. Generally. Yeah, let's talk siblings.
Woof.
Woof. First of all, just, we haven't mentioned that their last name is Cedar, which means his name is fucking Julius Cedar, which is so ridiculous. But also hilarious.
It's fine.
Julius Cedar.
When he got shot, he should have said, E2 Brute.
Yes. And then a bunch of other people come up and also shoot him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, siblings.
They're not just siblings. They're twins.
They're twins.
Which, twins are different. Different type of sibling.
And they're obviously very close. Mm-hmm. I liked their relationship. I thought it was sweet.
It's built on lies.
Yes, but not lies that they told each other.
Yeah, that's true.
I just thought of a story about siblings that I like, and it's twins. Do you remember It Takes Two, Mary Kate?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a great sibling story.
It's a great sibling story.
Okay. Yeah. That's all.
I mean, everything Mary Kay and Ashley have ever done is a great sibling story.
True. But that one's like, we found each other and we're going to, like, stick up for each other.
It's the parent trap.
Parent trap, speaking of twins.
Mm-hmm. I will say I have two sisters that are twins.
My mom is a twin. My mom is a twin with a brother.
Ooh.
Mm. Yeah.
Are they close?
So. Yes and no.
Like, they live in an old cottage together close?
No,
or?
Not close like that.
Okay.
They were definitely close, like, when they were younger, when my mom still lived in Michigan, but then my mom, like, moved to Florida and kind of,
that's
like...
That's a ways away.
Yeah. So, they're close, but they're, like, super different and, I don't know. They have an interesting relationship.
I think like most twins like are super close when they're young and then they kind of go their ways as adults. Because like at some point you have to have your own life.
And your own identity.
I mean,
I think it's easier to have your own identity when you're not like identical twins.
Yeah.
Or even when you're a, you know, like different genders.
That's
twins.
True. I keep comparing them to my sisters because that's the twins I grew up watching. But like they're identical. People used to always equate them to each other in high school and act like they couldn't tell them apart and, you know, like all of that. But now as adults, like they don't live near each other.
Is this Wyoming and Colorado?
It's Wyoming and Georgia. Or not Wyoming. Colorado and Georgia.
Okay.
the sister that lives in Wyoming is like 10 years older. I'm the same age as the twins. They're like 4 months older than me. Which is confusing to a lot of people, but we have different parents.
How did that happen?
Mystery! But like Jeannie and Julius never had a point where they had diverging paths because they have been living their childhood basically for 51 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think also it's like useful to point out that like they sort of experienced a tragedy young in life, and then I guess like they're. It's like an arrested development situation where, like, they stopped kind of growing up at that point. It's like they're stalled in that moment. Like, Julius still can't, like, ride in a car because it'll make him sick because of when he watched his dad get decapitated while riding a tractor with him. So
which
it's like
would and fuck then, you up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and like Jeannie was there, but she didn't like see it, but she heard it happen.
And she saw and it still, afterwards.
Like, saw the body. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. So it's like they like had a really like a formative traumatic incident that like trauma bonded them and also kind of kept them. I think they were 12 when it happened. And it seems like that was kind of like a whatever the opposite of a turning point is for them.
The point of regression, probably.
Yes.
Well, and besides trauma bonding, they also are carrying with them, like, what is to them a secret of, like, that this was actually a murder. I'm still not totally clear on
it. Okay. Here's what I think happened. The tractor had a plow attached to it, right? Or something. Like, some other piece of equipment.
Some sort of farm attachment.
Some sort of attachment on the tractor. And the hit, like, the thing that bolts the tractor and the attachment together, they didn't have, like, an official hitch. They just kind of made something to hold it together, which is bad and dangerous.
Yeah.
And so it came apart. The tractor went wild. Like there was an accident because these two pieces of heavy machinery were not attached well.
Yeah. And what happened was they, for their whole lives, thought that the attachment was put together this way by Rawson.
Who owns the cottage.
Because who owns the cottage. And he was, like, not being careful and didn't really care and was just like, whatever, it's fine, and did that. So it was his fault that their dad died. And that was the reason why they had free rent on the cottage. Because it was a secret, blah, blah, blah. But the actual reason was because Rawson and Dot were fucking. And Dot didn't want her kids to know about it. And she was like, it'll be suspicious that you're giving us free rent on the cottage. So we're going to lie. I'm going to tell them that this happened so we can say that that's really why we have the arrangement.
That's an elaborate lie.
She's like, what? Why would you do this? Again, this is like the thing of like, I don't understand why you do that. And like what actually happened was that their dad was the one who put that shit together. Wrong. Yeah.
I was just like, so when they were, I could understand, like, not wanting them to know that when they were little kids. When they're, like, 20? 30?
Also, like, even if you don't 40? Want them to know, like, who cares if they're little kids and they know that? Like, I just don't understand. It's like, you're not allowed to, like.
I mean, she also was having some other problems, though, because she was, like, keeping Jeannie from going to school.
Yeah. Well, she was, like, she wanted Jeannie to basically be, like, stuck with her forever. She wanted to keep Jeannie close and living with her, whether it was because she, like, genuinely was, like, afraid and wanted to protect her, or because she was, like, I need to have my daughter with me for the rest of my life, or both, I guess.
Now that we're, like, talking about it out loud, I'm thinking, like, there is an interesting contrast between Dot and Bridget. Because Dot doesn't want her kids to go into the world and just wants them to stay with her forever so she can protect them, I guess. And Bridget has a son who's legitimately off the rails. But she's like, I don't know, we can try to talk some sense into him, but... Yeah. I don't know. Bridge.
True.
Nath.
I would love to hang out with Dot and Bridget while they're drinking one night and just kind of get that dynamic.
Oh my gosh.
I'm curious.
I do love that after the affair stuff is revealed, Jeannie asks Bridget, did you know? And she's like, everybody knew.
Right. Like, everyone in this town knew everything except for them, which is also, like, how to me, but...
I don't know. Have you ever worked with two people who you were, like, pretty sure were hooking up?
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot less subtle than those people think it is.
I've worked with two people who were full out having an affair and the entire department knew about it.
Well, yeah, but they don't probably think anyone knows because they think they're being slick, right? So, like,
everyone knows, how do Julius and Jeannie not know is my question. Like, I fully believe that everyone else knows, but, like, how are they so stupid that they
can't? I just think they haven't been exposed to, like, enough things.
They're pretty naive.
Put together the pieces of that puzzle. Because, I mean, first of all, if you can tell when people you work with are doing that, if someone was living in your house,
right,
and also fucking someone else, you would...
Well, and Julius, not,
I mean,
like...
that happens all the time, I guess, to people. But, like, if your parent, who you've been with your entire life, is, like, leaving to, like, fuck the landlord.
Well, and Julius is, like, says, like, oh, there was that one Christmas where Mom was really happy. I think
laid.
She was, like, with someone or something. Yeah. Like, she had a boyfriend. It's, like... There are, like, 10 people in this entire town.
Yeah.
And Jeannie remembers that phone call where Dot was saying, like, basically kind of explaining to someone that she couldn't leave her. Right. So she was actively talking about it to other people.
Put the pieces together, people.
But if you have no frame of reference and, like, I mean, like, Jeannie has never had a relationship with anyone.
They also, like, where, haven't watched TV.
She's not, like, exposed to any of those, like, signs of things. Now, Julius, on the other hand, has had sex 3 times.
He should know.
Julius should have known.
Yeah.
Julius seems pretty normal, all things considered.
I know. Yeah, he does.
But, like, also not.
Not, but, like, in a way, though, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, he seems, like, socially capable.
I mean, of the two of them, if one of them's going to do, like, okay in the world, it's probably him.
Right. He's, like, friendly with the people in the town. Jeannie's, like, a feral cat.
Yeah. You know who I was imagining the whole time? Kathy Geis from 30 Rock.
I have not seen,
like, the CEO's daughter.
Oh. Oh my god.
Is that not the vibe of Jeannie?
That was not the vibe that I was picturing.
More verbal than that woman, that character is, but, like, that haircut, that outfit.
No, Jeannie doesn't have a haircut. Jeannie just has a long rope of hair, as it's described.
I mean, I can only picture it as a tiny helmet.
Once every winter, pulls over her shoulder and lops off the end. That's what Jeannie's haircut is.
I was picturing...
Jeannie looks like some, like, grown-up horse girl shit. That's what Jeannie looks like.
And I'm just like, I can only see Kathy Geis in that little helmet hair.
I was picturing Frances McDormand, but with really long hair. Just weathered.
I wasn't really picturing an actress, but I have a picture of her in my mind.
I don't usually. I usually am just...
It depends for
me. I don't usually either, but I couldn't help it with this.
I mean, this time, that's a pretty specific one, Susan.
It's like, it's the clothing, too, and just the sort of, like, like, so naive and just no makeup. Actually, it was something that when it popped in my head was when Julius was talking about kind of being embarrassed for Shelley to see what Jeannie's like. Just like, he was like, no makeup and not very put together.
And I was kind of like, Julius, do you think you're really put together?
I mean, he's getting laid.
I mean.
Anyway, how about that twist?
Well, there's like a couple of twists, right? There's the affair situation, and then also Jeannie finds out, like, she goes to the doctor because she keeps thinking she's having a heart attack, which really, it just sounds like a panic attack, if I'm being honest.
It's 100% a panic attack.
Yeah. In which case, I've had a lot of heart attacks in my time.
Right.
She was like, oh, my chest hurts, and, you know, I feel dizzy, and
I can't breathe. Can't
breathe. And I'm like, girl, you're just having a heart attack. Not a heart attack. A panic attack.
Girl, it's just a heart attack.
Just a little heart attack.
She thinks she's had a heart attack several times, and so she goes to the doctor finally, and he's like, yeah, you look great.
Because, like, she thinks for her whole life that she has a weak heart because of having rheumatic fever or something as a child. And, like, after that, she has, like, a memory of being in a doctor's office with her mom and her mom crying when she, like, finds out this information. And I'm like, is her mom crying that she found out that she didn't have any issue? Yeah. Her mom was like, please let her have a heart condition.
I need a reason.
Yeah.
Well, and then, like, you know, her mother, when she explains, like, the birds and the bees to her, is like, kind of like, don't ever do that because it's really dangerous if you have this heart. And I'm like, wow, we are just stunting her from all sides. Like,
right.
This woman's never going to do anything or go anywhere. And that's exactly what happened to her.
I did feel,
so she's fine.
I did feel really bad because she thought after she finds out she's fine, she doesn't have a heart condition and has never had a heart condition. She's like, I could have had a whole life. Yeah. Like, I could have gotten married. I could have had kids. I could have done all this stuff. I could have had a job. Like, her mom wouldn't even let her get a job.
And a bank account for you to cash the checks in. Or deposit the checks in. I have a bank account, guys. I know how it works.
Learned something new about Susan today.
Yeah. And, like, you get the cash from the check and then you put the check in.
This was that point when I was like, this is too sad.
Yeah, it just kept getting more and more sad. I guess, like, the ending is, like, in a way supposed to be uplifting, but, like, how did we feel? Did we feel uplifted by this?
No.
No.
I was angry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, lay it out.
I don't know. I was mad that it was trying to be optimistic at the end, because I was like, you've spent this whole book...
Don't even try.
...being so bleak... So bleak. Yeah. We cannot end on a positive note. I'm like, where was this through any of the book?
Yeah.
I don't know. It felt like disingenuous. It didn't feel earned.
And I also just, like, felt bad for Julius. Like, he didn't, like, I mean, he's not, like, the best person, but he didn't deserve that ending.
I mean, I also feel bad for Jeannie because she's now going to think forever that it's her fault he got shot when he didn't even see that text message.
Right. And also, like, I mean, it's even if he did see that text message and was coming home for her, it's still a jump to be like, it's my fault that my brother got shot because he was coming home.
I would feel the same, like, way, though.
Yes, but, like, he could have come home anyway, and, like, that is what happened. So it's, like...
Because his proposal didn't work out.
Right. Otherwise, he never would have come home again.
Probably not. He would have been like, oh, now we're married, right? So I don't move from here. I live here now.
Yeah. With, what's her name?
Shelley Swift.
Shelley
Swift.
That's
not a real name.
It's not, and she's never just called Shelley, not once. So.
No, she's Shelley Swift.
Who
lives above the fish and chip shop.
And is always dusty.
I feel like it is a little hopeful, or it's not uplifting, but it's a little hopeful that Jeannie does have that realization of, like, I could have had a wife. Because then you at least think, hopefully from here, she will have some sort of life. Like, at least
she'll be 51.
A little more full than what she had before. The reason it's not uplifting, though, is because she's 51.
But yeah. 51 I think it would have not dead.
It's not dead, but if she was 31 when this happened, it's like, sure, you're stunted, but like, there's a little more hope because you got more space after that to like play with.
Yeah, it's not that I don't think she can accomplish things. It's that it's like a late time in life to begin learning how to do literally get a bank anything. Account.
Well, yeah, and I mean, she's at such a deficit too, because like, just reading. And she writing can't. Is she like, can't.
Yeah.
It does seem like she's learning to read at the end.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's gotta be hard.
She could have just done that a long time ago.
50, though. Probably.
Yeah, well, because all of that stuff is harder to learn the older you are. Mm-hmm. So, she's gonna struggle out there. So it's not uplifting, but there's like a little glimmer of like, it feels like maybe she could want something for herself, and she's probably never even thought to want anything for herself before.
They could have an income, because Julius gets money from NHS to live, because he's disabled. Right. She could get money as a caretaker. They are just so proud.
Yeah, that's the other thing that is very frustrating, and that is clearly a, like, something that Dot has instilled in them.
Yeah.
Basically, like, I hate Dot. I think she's the worst mom ever. She sucks. Fuck her. Fuck Dot.
It was hard, too, because, like, my grandmother, who I love so much and basically raised me for a good chunk of my life, she's named Dot. I'm like,
not Grandma
Is it
Dot.
Dorothy?
It is.
Cute.
It is. I love the name Dorothy. Get a cute nickname out of it. But this one made me...
Not this bitch.
Change my mind a little bit.
I mean, it's a better name than Julius Cedar. That's B.
You're really upset about that one.
It's bad.
Yeah, it's dumb. It reminds me of, like, when I first started dating Justin and people were like, is that his real name? And yes. I'm like, yeah, that's his real name. That's not nearly as bad as Julius Cedar. It's just, like, his name is a phrase put together with his last name. So people would be like, is that really it? I'm like, yeah, that's really his name, y'all. Like, no, he puts that on all of his social media profiles and on his business cards as a joke. As, like, not even a good joke.
So, I would be like,
it's like not it funny. It's just kind of like,
it's just a phrase.
Take it out with his parents.
Well, it's not even, that wasn't even his given name at birth. Like, his stepdad adopted him. So his last name changed.
So it couldn't have been intentional, because there was no way to know.
It was an accident.
Well, there you go.
Should we rate this?
Oh. I'm not proud.
Uh-oh.
But I did give it a 2.
Sick.
I just did not enjoy the process of reading it, because it made me angry.
I gave it a 3. I did enjoy the process of reading it, but then became more annoyed as I thought about it after. But I listened to the audiobook, and I like took some walks around. I mean, I personally like British people.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with British people. Unlike Mary. But no, I liked the narrator. I thought she was good, and I was walking around. It's like crisp fall weather. You know, I was like listening to it while I went around the city and thought about how cute it sounded in the little village. And then I thought it was sad. But I was like having a, you know, a nice experience. It was a like kind of weirdly cozy book to read. Mm-hmm. So like I was fine with that, and I gave it a 3, I think, for that and for like the writing, which I thought was good. But overall, like we have discussed our issues with being confused about the purpose of this book, which I think is like my main complaint.
Yeah. A fair criticism. I haven't rated
it. I gave it a 5.
Give it a 6 if I could. No, I'm just kidding. I also gave it a 3, or I'm going to. I haven't done it yet. Yeah. Mostly because, like, I just know this is not going to stick with me.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
When I put this away, it'll just be put away.
Julius Cedar is going to stick with you.
That will, because that's going to, like, go down in history as, like, the dumbest character name ever, but
okay. I think you need to remember that there is a character named Officer Curtin in a Sherry Lapina novel, so
yeah,
let us not forget.
And the Krupps,
yes.
Like, this is a coffee maker just pointing out things in the room and calling characters that.
Exactly.
Okay, fair. So, not the worst one ever, but that's the one thing I'll remember from this, which isn't saying anything great. I do, though, I agree that it was kind of cozy, and I like atmospheric type writing, and I don't mind, like, a slower book either. Mm-hmm. So, I was, at the beginning, I thought, like, ooh, I'm going to settle in with this one, but yeah, I just kind of got a little bored in the middle.
It's weird because I never even felt bored. I was just like, I don't know, like waiting for more to happen.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, that's like kind of what boredom is. Like, nothing's
happening. I guess. Not enough is happening. I wasn't not enjoying. I wasn't like, oh, I can barely pay attention. I'm bored. But I was just kind of like, are we getting to something or not?
Mm. Yeah.
I need to manage my expectations.
Yeah, that's what, like, I thought I was going to settle in and enjoy the process of settling in, but I did get a little, like, impatient, I guess, with it. But I didn't, like, you know, I didn't dislike it. I just, you know, I feel like it was fine.
Yeah. And I also am frustrated that the revelations were not revelations to me anyway. But maybe I should have paid less attention.
It's fine. This for me was also just like a classic case of what I thought it was going to be was something totally different. Not based on that exact Goodreads description. I feel like I read like an article about it a while back, and I thought it sounded like a different type of thing.
Have you read any of her other books?
I haven't, but I think I would because I like her writing style. I mean,
well, a lot of the reviews on Goodreads were like, I really love her other books, and I did not enjoy this one as much.
Huh, well, maybe I just picked the wrong one. Yeah.
Thanks, Susan.
I'm sorry.
Look, it was fresh. There was no way to know.
If it makes you feel any better, I'm like on a similar readings. I'm on a roll of slump.
Yeah.
Like, just average reads with myself as well. Slump. But welcome to that experience that I'm currently having with like the last 5 things I've read. I've just been like,
if I'm reading fine. Just for myself, if I'm not enjoying it, I'm like, you're dead to me.
Yeah. I would have finished it. Like, you know, I wouldn't. Oh, Mary's like, I would have DNF'd it. Okay, wow, powerful.
Powerful. I just, like, there came a point where I was like, this is so sad. Like, it felt like sadness porn. At a
poverty
point.
Porn.
And I just.
I didn't think it was that.
She was
egregious.
Like eating out of old bean cans and sleeping under a public restroom.
I mean, who among us? I didn't feel like it was sadness porn, but
that's,
I get,
maybe harsh.
I get what you're saying.
I didn't think it was like exploitation.
Well, it also, like, it didn't feel like anything different was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, end goal for Jeannie is she wants to live in their crappy cottage again.
Right. Low stakes almost, if that's your your biggest goal. Although the stakes are high because you could be homeless.
So. I don't know. Like, I feel like it sound like I don't want to sound like I'm like, F poor people.
I don't think anyone is going to like write us an email like beer. Mary hates poor people and said they can't have beer or fun.
Mary doesn't hate poor people. She hates English people.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's clear.
Especially if they're poor.
From like the types of books I pick most of the time that if I'm choosing something to read, it's going to have some like escapist element. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's going to be science fiction or it's going to be fantasy or it's going to have like something weird going on or like a cult or like something.
I thought this would have English countryside escapism.
Yeah.
It just.
Which like it did. But yeah. Then I was like, oh, now I'm getting really sad. And, like,
I mean, I was escaping into a much worse life than my own. So that was.
So yeah. Then when you snapped back to reality, you were like, damn.
I mean, I also
shit's
will
going
say,
okay for me.
I've been flavored. I've had like difficult conversations with different people this week about politics. And that has like I didn't in my emotions didn't want to be sad. And so I was like already sad and then got pulled further into sadness and it just wasn't a good combo. I mean, I think like one of the things I love most about doing this podcast is I love reading things I wouldn't read otherwise.
Same.
And
well, you're welcome.
Being pushed to like finish it and not just be like, nah.
But not this
like,
time.
It's making me, it makes me get out of my comfort zone. And even if I didn't like something, I don't regret having read it or like regret the conversations we have about it. But it just wasn't my fave.
Yeah. And that's totally okay. Fair. They can't all be your fave. Well, this is, I love that about this podcast also, while we're just talking about how great we are as a podcast. Yeah. Whenever we, like, in our group text, whenever someone is like, oh, I'm thinking about picking this book, is this okay with everyone? I always
cares.
Say yes. Like, even if I'm like, that fucking sounds terrible. But, like, I'm wrong about that a lot. You know, like.
I don't even, a lot of times, like, someone will say.
I don't ever.
Yeah, I don't even.
I'm just like, yeah, sure.
I'm just like, yeah, whatever you want.
You know, like, if I feel like that about it, like. I probably should read it, you know, like, because I'm never going to do it on my own, but I'm probably going to get something out of that. But so I'm always like, yeah, if you feel good about that, like you do that. But there have been a few where I've been like, if I see the word speculative, like,
I'm no. in 100%
and I'm hard out. So, I try. You know, but we've read some speculative stuff that I've been like, huh.
Yeah.
Never would have picked that up.
Like Station 11?
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Love it.
Clara and the Sun? Mm-hmm.
Perfect example. I did not want to read that book.
Yeah.
Like, I was.
It's so funny to me.
Not interested.
I didn't want to read it because I am very biased against Kazuo Ishiguro.
Because you disliked one of his books but liked
the
other
one. Yeah,
but
I've been forced to read that book so many times. I took a class that was like the English countryside in literature and we had to read Remains of the Day and I was just like.
Hold on, you took a class about the exact thing I was just talking about.
You could have read this book
I could have. Look, I didn't like a lot of the books in class.
I probably would have.
Yeah, I mean, we did
Mary hates England again.
I could have been like, lay me down in a bog.
Pride and Prejudice.
Want to feel the mist.
Remains of the Day. Hated it. I don't remember anything else we read, honestly.
I haven't read Remains of the Day, so I can't speak to that.
But I really liked Claire and the Sun, and I was not.
Yeah.
I actively was like, I don't want to read this book.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think of the last time I felt that way.
Guarantee you it was something I picked.
Probably. It was probably one of the like thrillers that we read.
I love a thriller.
I think I kind of felt that way about When No One was watching.
I love that
is
book.
Watching. And I hated it.
You missed the sex scene.
I was correct.
See, I wish Emily was here for this specific part of this discussion, because she, as soon as she saw that book, she sends me thrillers all the time and is like, this is exactly what, and that's how I found that one and picked it. So
that's the only time when it's like, oh, let's read this. And I'm like, I always say okay, but I'm like, oh.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I've been very restrained in the amount of thrillers that I've chosen. Because trust me, that's probably almost exclusively what I would pick. For a book club type discussion, like, I have a lot of fun talking about that kind of thing. Too. And it's harder to talk about this. Or Clara and the Sun.
Yeah.
All right. Good chat.
Yeah.
We did it.
We did it.
We have no feedback.
Oh. Awesome. Which I think we have some, there is feedback out there. It just hasn't been given to us yet. Because I know, what was the last thing that we did? Detransition Baby?
Yeah.
Yes.
A few people have commented, like, on our Instagram posts about,
like, I'm reading
I'm reading this now, or I just finished this. And so I will just bother those people coming up soon. Because I do want to hear what other people
I
know
thought about that
Jordan
one.
in the last letter to us said...
Yeah, Jordan, hit us up. Let's go. I believe RJ read it as well.
Yeah.
She said something about it. So we have people. We just need to bother them and tell them to take time out of their day to do that for us.
Yeah.
You could email us. You could message us on any social media. You could record an audio message and send it to us.
Yeah, then you're really on the podcast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What's on the blog?
We got several good things on the blog.
Not for me, you don't.
Soon.
We have Queer Girl Book Club that I forced myself onto.
I found out during our last recording that Mary was
joining us. Yeah, well, Emily told me y'all were reading it, and I was like, oh, that sounds really good, and it's short. Like, maybe I'll read it. And she said, you could do the blog with us.
I'm happy that you did, but I had literally no idea that that was
it
happening.
It was so we can have a visual component.
There it is. You can be the Emily of the episode
and
show the book
since we last spoke. Yeah. The cover is...
It is on our Instagram, so
beautiful.
You can...
The cover's very
You can
cool.
see the cover there next to some toast.
It was a lot. And we talked about it. It's 100 pages,
It sounded like a lot. A
ton of stuff's crammed in there.
Yeah, it was... Interesting.
Trigger warning.
Can't
all of
say
it.
That I would recommend it, but I think you and Emily liked it a little more than I did. So we talked about that, and then I wrote a post finally about Midnight Mass. Rahul Kohli still has not seen the post. Mm-hmm. I can only assume because he has not retweeted it, and. Told me and posted a gif of Owen saying Christ, which is what he does when people are thirsty towards him. So
there's a whole paragraph. You know,
I'm waiting. Someone commented on the post and said that they liked the post and were grateful to me for, quote, including daddiness in my review. Mm-hmm. So you're welcome. That's it.
Also on the vlog, and I might have mentioned this last time, I don't really remember, so I'm just going to say it again. Tide has done another Fantasy Book Corner blog post where he talks about the fantasy books he has been reading and what he thinks about them. And he's read some good ones this time, I think. I don't really know. I mean... he read, like, Black Leopard, Red Wolf?
I can't remember also if you... And I know you and Emily mentioned this last episode, but I don't know if I ended up cutting it out because the post hadn't come out yet for YA Book Club, maybe. But there is a YA Book Club, just in case. Yeah.
We didn't like it.
And what's that book called again?
Mercury Boys, or Daguerreotype Lads, as I started calling it. It was wild.
And I'm joining for the next YA Book Club.
Yeah, I gotta read
Hopefully
it.
I don't forget everything about that book before then.
I need to get on it.
For our next other sew.
Emily's not here to rein us in, so just...
Emily's not here.
I need her to give me parameters.
At first, we thought we were going to do poetry or a graphic novel because those are two things that historically Emily does not want to talk about. But then we figured maybe those things would be hard to talk about. So we actually are going to do an essay collection, which is called The 2000s Made Me Gay by Grace Perry.
Very excited.
It is an essay collection about how gay the 2000s are, pop culturally speaking.
Can't wait.
And then,
on our next book-pisode, on our next book-pisode, we are doing, okay, should I explain this?
No,
I'm not going to. I'm not. No. Okay. We are reading Everyone Knows Your Mother is a Witch by Rivka Galchen.
I'm so pumped for this book because it's been sitting on my bookshelf for like a year.
This is like one of my favorite covers, like, of last year. It's just like so, like, it just really pops. It's like this color of purple that you do not see very often.
But it's simple.
Yeah, it's very simple.
It's not busy or anything.
No. Of course, it's FSG and Rodrigo Corral, like, you know, art directed, and that's why it's beautiful. But it's very
Susan
cool.
And I are just like, yeah.
Yeah, I know that. Name you just said.
He's like the head of FSG, like he does all of their, he's like the head of their art department, so like everything is very heavily influenced by him, and he's like basically like the cutting edge book designer. Like so many trends that happen come from, they start there,
yeah,
because they are one of the only publishers that will just like do whatever they want with the book cover instead of being like, let's make it look like this. Like, they don't do that. They don't, like, bring stuff in and say, like, we're going to make it look like this book. They're just like, we're going to do whatever we want.
I mean, that's probably the better way to be.
And looking really cool and setting trends, but no one else is allowed to do that. I mean, he did, like, Annihilation. He did all of those books.
Okay, obviously.
Say no more.
yeah.
I'm ashamed to not know him now.
He's done like all of Chuck P's books.
You're gonna start name dropping him now, Mary. Like now you have.
I am. He's in my.
He did Fates and Furies, which like was a huge trendsetter as far as how design is.
Did not like that book at all, but I did like that cover.
It's a beautiful cover. He did The Fault in Our Stars. A very iconic book cover. Just, I mean, if you go to his website and scroll through, it's kind of wild, like, how many books. Yeah. Like, he does, like, all of, like, Jonathan Franzen's covers, like.
I really liked the original cover for Unsettled Ground, not the. There was, like, an original publishing of it earlier in the year, and it had a different cover. It's the one that's on our website.
The flowers?
Oh, the darker one?
Yeah, I really like that one.
It is pretty. I like the other one, too. I like that it is, like, the coming through the, like, wallpaper, sort of, or whatever.
Yeah, I just don't like that green color is weird to me. Anyway, this has been Book Design Corner, where I talk non-specifically about things I like and don't like about books, and Kelly knows actual information.
Yeah. Everyone Knows Your Mother is a Witch looks even better in person than it does on the website because it's printed with like probably a Pantone, which is like a very specific ink mixture.
I do know what that is.
Do know Pantone colors of the year.
Yes, which is like that's what you do when you want a color to look really nice. If you have any comments about this unwieldy discussion of this book, you can email us at thesquad@booksquadgoals.com. booksquadgoals.com is our website. That's where you can find our blog. You can follow us on social media. We are at booksquadgoals on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can subscribe to us on any podcast app that you use, but please make sure you leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts because that is the most important one as far as getting new listeners. We appreciate you. we love you. And please write us feedback, because it's rude that you that you didn't this time or ever, maybe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I used to cry and I used to do a whole thing where I begged and I screamed, mm-hmm. but I'm trying to be.
We're not going to do that anymore.
Yeah, I've grown. I've matured. It's been a couple of years of doing this, and I have learned how to control my emotions about this, but I need you. Okay, just kidding. It's fine.
I kind of miss when you yelled at people.
You know, I could bring it back for the new year.
One of my favorite things you've ever done on episode was when you said, like, if you haven't subscribed yet, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, so loud. I loved it. And I think people felt attacked to the point where they were like, I got to take action.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I'm always trying out new techniques. So let me know what worked for you if you are a subscriber.
Yeah. What was it that Kelly said that got you to subscribe?
That's it, I guess.
Yeah, that's all.